Welcome back to the Lions Collective bonus episode. Will never left the studio. He slept here. It's good. I'm Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, joined as always Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, Will Birchfield at his place of employment at 97.1.
Yeah.
And we're back, not on our customary Wednesday time slot, doing a little Thursday action today because we thought the joint practices merited a little conversation. And so got to start this thing, fellas. Apologies to Khalil Dorsey. We did this big roster breakdown yesterday, if you weren't with us, and we go an hour and 15 minutes and we forget that Khalil Dorsey exists.
And then we get phone calls from Khalil Dorsey, who was like, hey.
these people actually probably believe that happened, but maybe he did. Maybe you got a call. But look, I think we're all putting Khalil Dorsey on the roster. That means Ian Kennelly and or Eric Hallett probably out. Are we in agreement with Eric? Can we just move on to the next thing and shed our embarrassment?
Yeah, I'll ask Hallett in order to keep Dorsey.
Does that mean Hal's going to give us a call now? Is that what that means? Yeah.
I just blocked his number.
Before we get into joint practices, we always talk to Dan Campbell before a practice, and I thought it was kind of an interesting session today. And I don't want to say he broke any news, maybe a little bit. It sounds like Josh Pascal is going to start the season on NFI. Make some of the roster decisions easier. I think we kind of slotted him in that spot yesterday, but there were a couple comments on Mekhi Wingo and Hendon Hooker that I just wanted to touch base with you guys and you know, see what your thoughts were coming out of it. And so I asked Campbell just with the difficulty of Wingo being activated here at the late stages, he's not going to do any team drills before the end of camp. And so just wondered what the challenges of that evaluation was, and Campbell acknowledged it's tough. It's really tough. And I was listening to the answer, and I think there were a couple different ways you could go at the interpretation. It wasn't clear, but I kind of heard it as they weren't 100% sold on Wingo making the roster. I think it was not a done deal decision. And you know, I was curious, first of all, what you guys thought of my interpretation, or what maybe your interpretation was.
Yeah, you know, when we talked to Wingo at Locker Room Cleanout, he seemed very optimistic that he would be ready to go by maybe even OTAs, if not, then the start of training camp. He revealed a couple days ago when he spoke that he had a cleanup procedure this summer, which kind of set him back a little bit more. So I was kind of always factoring in Wingo on my roster projections just because, you know, I think at one point Campbell said they hope to have him back in early September. And I'm like, okay, then if that's the case, maybe he can be ready to go for week one. So I was just kind of slotting him in there tentatively. But yeah, I think after hearing Campbell say it's tough, we don't really know where he's at, he's not going to participate in team stuff, that's sort of a curveball. And if they want to give him some time to ramp up fully and actually get out there and practice, then he might not be ready for week one. And maybe you can kind of delay that a little bit. But there were a couple guys, and Justin asked some good questions to get some clarification on that, that I think kind of changed the equation in terms of the roster math. But Wingo's certainly one of them after hearing Campbell a little bit.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like Wingo is viewing his situation and his timeline through a slightly different lens than maybe Campbell and the coaching staff are. I mean,
that's never happened before.
He said a couple of days ago, like, he fully expects to be ready to go by week one. And it certainly sounded today like the coaching staff thinks otherwise. Now, that might mean he still makes the 53, but I don't think they're counting on him to be on the field in Lambeau in what is now just 2 weeks, 2 weeks away, even if Mekhi in his own mind is.
Yeah. I think the Wingo debate's really interesting because he's already a unique body type. He gets often eclipsed when we're taking attendance because he's the smallest defensive tackle by a mile, and you just lose him behind Broderick Martin. But he's already small. He didn't have a very productive rookie year. He's coming off a very lengthy absence, and I'm half wondering if Brad Holmes is going, I think I might be able to slide this guy through waivers because he only is going to fit so many teams. And I know the Jets had some defensive tackle issues that they resolved yesterday with two trades for defensive tackles. I don't know, you know, really what Aaron Glenn's love of, well, you know, Mekhi Wingo schematically, but I don't think it's a done deal. And I think that's an interesting thing for us to watch here as the 53 is set next week. in regards to Hooker, you know, Dan was asked by another reporter if you know, the difference between keeping two and three quarterbacks and kind of what goes into that. And, you know, he stated the obvious, you know, if we're going to keep a third quarterback, we're going to have to make a cut somewhere else, linebacker, safety, offensive line, somewhere. And then he said the interesting thing. He said, last year is on our minds, you know, with the way we got hammered with depth yep. issues and losing guys. And suddenly you give pause because Campbell doesn't say these things. Like he's just so honest and he's just speaking honestly about, you know, how that affected them mentally to lose all those guys. And so suddenly I'm like, oh, I don't know. I was so locked in on them keeping the third because of Brad's tendency to give his draft picks that longer leash and the progress we've talked about Hooker making, but I'm less convinced today by a significant margin than I was yesterday.
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like today for the first time we heard the Lions beginning to rationalize cutting Hendon Hooker, if that's indeed what it comes to. And I agree, Campbell was just kind of thinking candidly out loud. And I know I feel better about what I said here last night, which is that if it were up to me, I just don't think a roster that is built to win right now this season should be prioritizing a roster spot on a QB3 who's highly unlikely to ever see game action over a more deserving depth player at a position that might become one of need in week 5 if you need an extra defensive end, or week 8 if you need an extra defensive back. And with some of the other names that are now re-entering the roster picture, whether it's Dorsey or even a guy like Wingo, that could put a pinch on a player like Jackson Meeks or a player like even Keith Cooper. And I think the Lions are being real with themselves when they admit that they're sort of scarred for the right reason psychologically by like this mountain of this avalanche of injuries that buried their defense last year. And they don't want to experience that again, just for the sake of keeping a quarterback that might never see the field.
It kind of felt today like they're like maybe soft launching.
That's what I mean. Like the rationalization was already being explained.
Yeah. Like I was sitting next to Justin in the press conference at the end of it. We kind of had a conversation like, okay, that feels a little different, doesn't it? And I don't know, when you hear comments like that, where like, they know the injury situation they dealt with last year. And like, you've seen it kind of affect their offseason decisions, whether it's, you know, adding guy like Roy Lopez for extra depth mm-hmm. in the interior, like some of the moves they've made, the guys they brought in, they are focused on like avoiding the situation they went through last year. And that's easier said than done. That was kind of a freak deal. You can't really expect that every year, but at least it seems like they're trying to take account for that and do everything they can to set themselves up to have that depth ready to go without having to do it, you know, bringing guys from the outside. So if you're developing guys in your own camp and you like the players you have, and it comes at the expense of a third quarterback who, by all accounts, is never really going to see the field, that's a tough decision that you're going to have to make. And I understand that the investment they put in Hendon, and, you know, for a long time, it was hard for me to kind of process them cutting him when they spoken so highly of him over the years and were patient with him. They knew that first year was going to be in the ACL. Second year was sort of his first year. Like, they told us all that in the past. Yeah. But I think they're at a point now where the roster is so strong and you are going to lose a good guy or two if you end up keeping Hendon. And if that's not a decision they're willing to make, then they're going to do what's best for the organization. And if we're to take them at face value, that could involve cutting Hendon.
Yeah, I think their comments on the past in Hendon felt to me anyways more like justifications to keeping him around. And today's comments felt more like explanations as to why it no longer makes sense to do that. And the other piece of this to remember is, like, as damaged as the Lions were on defense last season, they were remarkably and fortuitously healthy on offense. And you can't really and reasonably expect that to continue this season. And we may have seen the first piece of evidence in regards to that today when Graham Glasgow leaves practice, and we'll get into it. But it's just another reason to consider keeping players at depth spots that might actually be used, whether it's offensive line or defensive line in particular.
That 2023 draft is shaping up to be such a weird one. I mean, just
Hall of Famers. Right?
We're talking Gibbs, Campbell, Laporta, Branch. Like, you're talking star power. Yep. Campbell's the worst of that bunch, and he's pretty damn good. And then you got the back half, and none of those guys might be on the roster after Tuesday with Hendon, Brad Martin, Colby Sorsdahl, well, IR, but you know what I'm saying, and Antoine Green. Like, just a very, very weird draft. But I think we've talked a lot enough about yesterday. Let's talk about today. Joint practice with the Texans. I said to Colton, I've seen a lot of joint practices. That might have been one of the most entertaining. We had touchdowns, we had turnovers, we had big plays, we had blown big plays, highly competitive, back and forth. But yeah. We would be mistaken if we don't have this Graham Glasgow conversation kind of right out the bat. Mm-hmm. And we don't really know what his status is. I will say it didn't look terrible, particularly with him walking off the field under his own power at the end. And when we say walk off the field, it's a long walk from the far field to the building. I mean, it's a good 100 plus yards. So it's not like they didn't need to pull the cart out.
And he walked off alone, right? Like he wasn't even attended to by a trainer.
Yeah.
But it raised the question for me. I think it's a very funny one given how maybe this fan base felt about Glasgow at the end of last season, but he's kind of now one of the most important players on the roster in the sense that if you lose him, the replacement is concerning. And Kingsley Aguakin stepped in today. And, I think that looked about how you would expect it to look.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate. I think it happened. Was that the situational period at the end of practice that he left?
Yeah.
So he went down. He got up on his own. He was kind of slow to walk, but did walk off under his own power. So, you know, I know when you're on Twitter and you see Graham Glasgow leaves with a lower leg injury, you think the worst. It didn't look entirely bad, but again, we don't know the diagnosis yet. So I probably have to wait for either one of the insiders to put it out there, as they do sometimes, or Campbell talking Saturday. But yeah, I agree with you, Justin. Like, he has quickly become one of the most important players on this roster. One, because he already was important because he's one of the vets in that room. It's a really young line right now. But two, it's just the depth behind him. They have repped Tate Ratledge exclusively at right guard since maybe day three or four. Like, that was quickly kind of sorted out. Yeah. We thought it might drag on a little bit. It really hasn't. And the guys behind him, you do have Kingsley Aguakun. You know, Tristan Colon was a guy that has some center starts under his belt in the NFL, but he goes down with an injury. You know, there's not many guys that can play that center position. I know Colby Sorsdahl was kind of getting some reps there. He goes down. So, like, they're a little bit thin at that center position. So, again, we could just – this could all be for nothing. Maybe Graham's fine, and they're just getting easy with him. But if he does have to miss some time, you might have to look outside the organization to bring someone in or maybe get Kingsley ready to go because, we don't really know the situation right now, but it could be something.
And even if you do go outside and bring in a proven veteran of some kind, he's just simply not going to have the rapport with Jared Goff that Graham Glasgow does. And that's the reason, to echo something you said, Justin, last night, that I think they pivoted so quickly from Tate to Graham and camp. Was there wasn't the natural flow between Tate and Jared that there obviously is between Tate and Graham. And, like, Tate has all of the physical abilities and physical stature to play center. And Brad Holmes will be the first to tell you, in some ways, he's already the presence and the specimen and the athlete that Frank Ragnow ever was. But that's only half of the job there at center. And if Graham does miss time, they're going to have to ramp up Aguakun quickly and try and get him on the same page with Jared, which is not easily done in an offense that is very dense.
I keep thinking, like, if it's Kingsley, if they had to go into a game with Kingsley, you're talking about now an interior of three guys that have one regular season start and two, if you want to count the postseason, starts between them. Like, that level of experience just plummets. And it brings back Cologne, who I thought was making kind of a push to maybe jump Aguakun there. I believe he got the start in Atlanta when he got hurt the elbow. And we saw him for the first time today. I think that's the promising thing. He was out there running the hill with the trainer on the side. So usually when you see that, it kind of implies that guys are getting back. But that's a guy that's got 5 years of experience in this league. He's got more than 1,000 snaps. Played in Baltimore, which I think gives me a little bit extra confidence. Certain guys or certain organizations, you know, a guy comes from there, you feel a little bit better about it. He's got center experience. He's played all the different guard spots, but he hasn't started a game at center since 2021.
It's been a minute.
He's got three starts at center. And so, like, it's still kind of the same thing with the experience, right? And, you know, certainly doesn't have maybe zero snaps to Goff if, you know, just based on what we've seen in practice. I don't know why they would have Cologne snapping to Goff. And so, you know, you hope for the best with Glasgow, but he is older. He has had some durability issues the last several years, obviously a bunch in Denver that ended his tenure there kind of early. And so it's a really, really big concern, I think. And, you know, the offensive line is already kind of tenuous, right? Like, it's already teetering on an edge, and we're, you know, waiting for these young guys to take that step forward. I think you take Glasgow out of that middle, and it's a problem quickly.
Yeah, remember, the reason he wanted to play there was because when he was playing at guard, he felt like he was basically also playing at center with having to help Tate so much with those calls and those adjustments. And having a veteran to the right of Mahogany and the left of Ratledge goes a really long way. And again, like, we should re-clarify, Graham might be fine. He yep. looked okay walking off the field. We're not treating this like this is some long-term injury that has had a major impact on the season. But just to reiterate how important he is, it's not just because of what he does and how it operates with Jared, but it's the load that he takes off of Tate and Christian, who are highly inexperienced when he's playing between them.
I'm wondering if they would – sorry, real quick. I'm wondering if they would – and I asked this last night, but I'm wondering if they would maybe try to get Tate ready to go and play some center. I know it's not ideal. And then you put in a veteran like Yody that knows the offense, that has been in there just as a reserve, just to get some more experience on that line instead of going with
two second-year
guys and a rookie in the interior. That would be kind of
tough. It's amazing that this is what's become, at least in theory, of Taylor Decker, Graham Glasgow, Frank Ragnow, Kevin Zeitler, Penei Sewell. Like, whoa, this could be gut check time. Not just for the offensive line, but for the offense and for Jared Goff in a really big way.
For sure.
I think Ratledge is going to need some sleepovers at Goff's house just so they can bond, play some Sega Genesis till 2 a.m. Just, you know, I think that's the only way. That's the only way to get him over the hump. But as I mentioned earlier, a ton happened in this practice. And I mean, the first thing that jumped out, the receiving talent across the board between these two rosters is absurd. Which led to, I think, a lot of the playmaking. But I want to kind of just maybe tap into your big takeaways of the day. I know I watched the Lions offense most of the day. Will was focused on the Lions defense, and Colton was trying to do the madman thing and bounce around and watch both. So I think we got a pretty good wide scope of what happened in practice today. So let me start with Colton. You know, what was your takeaway from the day's action?
Yeah, I think after the Dolphins first joint practice, I tweeted that was the most lopsided practice I've
lopsided.
Ever seen. Lopsided. I would not say that for this one. I would say that was the most even practice, joint practice I've ever seen. And like, you kind of expected that coming in. These are two teams that probably consider themselves Super Bowl contenders. They have a really good shot, two really strong rosters, two really, you know, culture, head coaches, CEO kind of mindset. And they preach physicality and they demand that sort of style from their teams, and you see it when they're out there. So I was kind of floating back and forth between both fields. Probably didn't get the most detailed practice because I was kind of going back and forth, but I do think I saw quite a bit. Starting with, I think Houston's secondary is going to be really good this year. I know this is a Lions podcast, but Houston's secondary, I thought it was going to be a really good test for these receivers. And when you got Derek Stingley, Kamari Lassiter, who I really like coming out of the draft, I believe out of Georgia, 2024, those guys were performing at a high level. I think it was Stingley that got a hand on a pass intended for St. Brown in the end zone. Don't see that very often. But normally he's winning those battles, as we saw against Miami. Lassiter's a very physical corner. I think he had a pass breakup against J-Mo, maybe an overthrown ball in the end zone at the end of the situational period, but I would still consider that a win for him. You got the two pass rushers, obviously, Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson. Those guys are going to cause some damage out there when they're out there. But just starting with that side of the ball, I thought it was an even day. You saw Goff has some success. He did throw an interception. Yeah. There were some drops. The Porter had a couple drops. That was kind of uncharacteristic. So not the cleanest day, but also some good work. I thought Gibbs had a really impressive day out of the backfield, bouncing runs to the outside. So some promising stuff, some wins, some losses. But overall, like, that's how you get better going against quality teams like this.
Yeah, to continue the Texans theme, they also have some really good receivers. And I'm not breaking news here, but Nico Collins looks like he's about to assert himself as one of the best receivers in the NFL. I mean, 1,000 yards last year and only, I think, 12 games, probably on pace for something like 14, 1,500. And he looked every bit a wide receiver one today. He had some great battles all afternoon, or all morning, I guess, with Terrion. And Terrion got him a couple times, but so did Nico against Terrion. And he's a specimen. He's a physical, fast, strong receiver who can get in and out of his breaks, who can win balls in the air. And then you have Christian Kirk, who's working out of the slot alongside him. And I just felt like this Texans offense with CJ Stroud under center can pose all kinds of problems, especially when they get Joe Mixon back and healthy. Though it's good to see Nick Chubb out there today after that like gruesome kind of devastating injury that he suffered a couple of years ago. I thought the battles between TA and Nico Collins were really entertaining, and TA got him early on a deep ball in 11-on-11s play action pass. Stroud drops back and he's won probably 45-50 yards, and TA was pretty much step for step with Nico the whole way, and it came down to a jump ball maybe 5 yards from the goal line, and Terrion went up and made the play. And it's a play that he probably doesn't make last year because he's flagged for PI. And I don't say that to be funny. I say that probably because it's funny.
It's funny because you're right.
It's funny because it's true. But it's also true in that it signifies the ways that Terrion's grown so far this season. And it goes back to the first meeting that he had with DB's coach, Deshae Townsend, at the end of last season, when Deshae really latched on to the area of growth for Terrion as finding the ball when you're in phase, tracking it, locating, and getting your head around to make plays, and to ideally not just make plays, but come down with picks. And in this case, it was just a knockdown. But Terrion really last year never struggled to be in phase or in stride in almost every man cover route that he was assigned. It was when the ball arrived, he too often didn't have his head around and he'd get flagged for PI because he was just so tight. But it seems like this year, and on this particular rep today, he was not just there, but he was able to get his head turned around, locate the ball, go up and make a play on it and knock it down. So again, Nico had a number of good reps against him. I thought he won most of, or at least half of, like kind of the in breaking routes he ran against TA from the outside. But when it came to longer developing throws where it was Terrion's job to find the ball and then make a play, I thought he did a really good job.
I remember when the schedule came out last year, and the game I was most interested in watching was actually the Lions-Texans. I really like this team. I think they've kind of followed a similar rise. I really have a lot of respect and kind of enjoy listening to D'Amico Ryan's talk when I've had a chance to be around him at like league meetings and whatnot. Matt Burke, former Lions linebacker coach under Jim Schwartz, really, really smart guy, knew he had a bright future in this league. He's their defensive coordinator. And I don't know much about their brand new offensive coordinator, another branch of the McVay tree. So, there's probably some upside there. I think that the Texans are going to be a really good team this year on both sides of the ball, and possibly be a thorn in the side of the AFC if they can win their division and get a couple home games in the playoffs. I want to talk a little bit about the Lions wide receiver situation because it continues to be a topic, and I thought just so many guys stood out today, and we'll skip St. Brown because he stands out every day. J-Mo doing the normal J-Mo stuff as well. Lots of big plays, a couple concentration blunders, but that's who he is. It's the rest of the guys. And, we've been having this Tim Patrick, Isaac Tislaud debate kind of all off season. And what we're ignoring, I think, is that wide receiver 3 right now is Khalif Raymond. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's something that John Morton sees in him. I certainly know that Jared Goff obviously is a huge fan of Raymond's. He does all the things right, but his production has declined 2 years in a row, I think only 22 receptions last year, down from, you know, 48, 49 the first couple of years he was here. And it's weird because this is a guy that's in the final year of his contract, might be in his final year as a Lion, you know, with some of the moves they made for the future. And yet it looks like he's ready for this bounce back year. And I thought he had a great practice. I know that he dropped one in that situational drill that was a shallow crosser with all the green in the world in front of him, probably a 50-yard touchdown, like right off the bat. But yeah, bounced back, had two first down receptions, caught a lot of passes today, was kind of menacing. And so, you know, just open the floor. Like, what kind of season do you think that maybe Raymond could have? I think there might be something there with what Morton sees in him more than anything.
Yeah, if he were on another team, I think he could really have like a 500-yard season. Like, he's done it for this team before, but just it's hard to kind of picture him in with so many weapons here, because you're talking about J-Mo, Saint, Laporta, Gibbs, Tesla, Patrick. You know, that's a lot of mouths to feed. So I don't really know, I guess, his place in this offense. But you do see him out there with the first team quite a bit. Yeah. And I agree with you, Justin. It seems like Morton's trying to work him in there. So maybe he's the guy that we're not talking about enough. We talk about other guys like, oh, Sam Laporta's kind of flying under the radar. That's hard to say because he's a second-team All-Pro as a rookie. You know, like, this guy is a bona fide stud. But with a guy like Raymond, you see it on days like this where he caught two touchdowns. He's, you know, juking the secondary in space with his footwork, his quickness, his short area speed. And he's got the long speed too. And if Morton really wants to throw the ball deep a little bit more this offseason, or the season, I should say, Khalif is one of their fastest receivers. So he's going to be on the field, yeah, and he's going to have packages. So if that's the emphasis, if that's where he wants to take this offense, I think that's where you could see him kind of make his mark. But he's so reliable, and you can tell that he has the full trust of Jared Goff. He's always going to look his way if he beats his man, and without, yeah, hesitation doing it. So he certainly earned the trust of this coaching staff, this quarterback, and this offense in general.
And Raymond's almost always going to come down with the ball. Not that he's like a jump ball artist, but if you put the ball in his general vicinity, he's got really sure hands. And I think John Morton's arrival here is the key point. If you go back to 2022, when he was on staff and helping Campbell and Ben Johnson install this offense, who finished second on the team in receiving that year? It was Khalif Raymond. And I know, yep, the receiving room then was much different than it is now. And, you know, it was Josh Reynolds and DJ Chark, and Laporta wasn't here yet, but it was Khalif Raymond with a 600-yard season. And if I recall correctly that year, a number of deep balls, he would get over top of the defense and find himself 40, 50-yard catches. And he has real speed, not just the ability to win on like stutter step, jitterbug type routes out of the slot. He can stretch it a little bit. And obviously Morton sees something in him that maybe was overlooked when all of these different pass catching weapons joined the core.
I'm going to close on this because Campbell, you know, today talking just about the roster decisions, the difficulty of the cuts that lie ahead. He said right off the top of his head, he had three like roster decisions that were already kind of weighing on him, and, you know, acknowledged maybe even more than really sat down and thought about it. And we've talked, you know, maybe ad nauseum about the receivers, but I think today was a perfect example of how difficult their decisions are. I thought it was a really, really strong day for Dominic Lovett, multiple chain moving catches on third down, doing the little things that you really want to see, the gritty things, if you will. Jackson Meeks, you know, catching some passes in the end zone. Tim Patrick, I thought, you know, continues to have his late surge back to the guy we thought he was, even if it's coming against the second team. And Tesla doing kind of what he's done all camp and having some big catches. And so, you know, they've got these seven guys, and, you know, I still struggle to figure out how they could possibly get seven on the roster, but man, all seven of them are deserving. And, you know, just to go back to Colton's point from yesterday, Tom Kennedy, big plays today, big plays from Tom Kennedy.
Never wrong, just early. Never wrong, just early.
And so, like, I don't know, was there anything else that stood out to you or jumped out to you? Like, what do you think the other roster decisions that are weighing on Campbell. What do you think those are?
I think on the defensive line, he's facing some difficult decisions. I thought Ukwu had another strong practice today. He popped for a sack late in practice, and he seems to be surveying the offense in a way that he wasn't last year, and able to diagnose things a little bit more quickly. And I think the way he's played over the past week, including last week's preseason game, is maybe going to force the Lions to give him a little more thought than they probably were a week ago.
Yeah, I would say Ukwu is definitely one of the ones on their mind. I kind of have Nate Lennon, but you look at that edge room, they're quickly dropping. And if Pascal is not a part of that equation, maybe you have to go outside the organization and pull Tim Patrick and try to get someone else in there if you don't like Ukwu enough. But he's certainly one. I'm wondering if they try to find a place for Eric Hallett, just because he's so versatile. He could play multiple positions. So maybe that allows you to stay a little bit thinner at that DB spot as a whole. But yeah, I mean, they're going to have their work cut out for him. I feel like, again, kind of the Hendon Hooker conversation, it feels like they are soft launching a little bit. Like, hey, just pulling it out there. It's going to be tough, man. We got so many guys we like. That's my Campbell impression, in case anyone hadn't picked up on that. But it does feel like they're leaning on that, and they're just – it's weighing on Campbell. He's a guy that every cut down day, he's miserable because he cares so deeply for these guys, and he knows that, you know, these are guys' livelihood. Like, guys are trying to make the roster, get paid, make a name for themselves, and it's on him and Brad Holmes to make these decisions on the roster and kind of dash some dreams there. So I know it's not easy for him, and you can kind of see it starting to wear on him, and I'm sure it'll ramp up when we talk to him on Monday and even after the game Saturday. But some tough decisions lie ahead for sure.
Jeffrey makes a really good point in the chat, and it's one that Dave Burkett made when we were talking today. Just the if you notice a lot of the trade action going on right now around the league, there's a lot of wide receivers involved. And, you know, I don't know if that means that one of your guys is maybe marketable, or you want to hold on to guys because maybe you're less sure that a Lovett or a Meeks is going to be able to slip through waivers. And so, you know, it just adds to the conversation for sure.
Hey, lastly, I wanted to note one more guy who stood out today, kind of in the same way that Jahmyr Gibbs stands out every day and Amon-Ra St. Brown stands out every day. But on defense, Brian Branch is such a menace. And I feel like as we focus so much of our attention this training camp on Hutchinson and Tyleek's integration and Anzalone's return, we've almost forgotten how much of a weapon Brian Branch is. And we put him on the cover art for this episode, so I do want to touch on him briefly. They're just deploying him in so many ways right now. I think the very first play of 11 on 11 this morning, he combined for a run stuff with DJ Reed, and then later on, maybe two or three drives later, he was lined up basically at the line, and he crashed through the offensive line and took down Chubb from behind with a tackle in the backfield. And look, I understand we had like a running gag last year on our podcast, Justin, that I thought Brian Branch was the best defensive player on the Lions. And that's probably going too far, just how dominant Hutch is. But I maintain that he's the most versatile chess piece on the Lions defense. And I think we're going to see Kelvin Shepard just be incredibly creative with him this year. And this might be pushing it a little bit too far because they're different body types, but I see Brian Branch making the kind of impact on the Lions defense this year that Kyle Hamilton makes on the Ravens defense. The ability to get into the backfield for tackles for loss, the ability to cover, the ability to come down with interceptions, the ability to, I think, potentially end up with more sacks this year, paints the picture of a player who's going to do everything in so many ways for the Lions. And he just looks to me even more explosive than maybe he has in years past. And with Shepard calling the shots this year, it feels like he's poised for a monster year. Maybe like Antoine Winfield, given the body type, is a better comp for him. But just that comprehensive impact on the defense is something that only Brian Branch can provide to this unit.
Colton, I am never bringing up Tom Kennedy again after that love letter. That was a love letter from Will to Brian Branch. You get like a 1% cut when he gets that monster contract in a year.
I agree with everything he said.
I do too.
Point to the holes in the logic, man.
Man, he was just sitting there checking a box of all the things he wanted to say.
Hey, made Mustafa put him on the artwork. We had to give him
to talk about it.
it's a good thing you did. I don't think of that enough. But look, our goal was to have a truncated episode today. We wanted to make sure to come back and check in with you. But I got dinner reservations, fellas. Youngest turned 11 years old today, so we're gonna get that done. We will be back normal time slot next Wednesday, and that is significant because the Lions 16-man practice squad should be established by the time we go on air. So we'll be able to have all your practice squad updates and maybe some stuff on the 53-man roster. I don't know.
If we get to it, if we have time.
Yeah. All right, fellas, for Will Birchfield, for Colton Pouncey, I'm Justin Rogers. Subscribe, like, do all the things you do on YouTube. I don't know. I don't run these shows, but I think that's what the kids do.
And for Brian Branch, I'm Will Birchfield.
On that.